Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
We need each other, partner. Even with all that gear on your shoulder, you won't last a night. Not by yourself.
I'll take my chances.
I'm gonna have to insist that you hold the hell up. All right, believe it or not, the fate of the entire damn human race might depend on it.
What the hell are you talking about? Who is this guy?
I'm Sergeant Abraham Ford, and these are my companions, Rosita Espinosa and Dr. Eugene Porter. We're on a mission to get Eugene to Washington, D.C. Eugene's a scientist, and he knows exactly what caused this mess.
Hey, Zedheads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And I'm Renee. Hey.
What? And this is The Cast of Us, episode 629.
And this episode, we're covering The Walking Dead, season 4, episode 11, Claimed.
Claimed. Welcome, Renee. It's so awesome
Renee's
to have you
here.
On.
Yay.
I'm so happy to be here.
When did you start watching The Walking Dead? I forget.
At the very beginning, 14 years ago.
Oh, because wow. You're a zombie fan? You just were excited about it right off the bat?
Yes, and I forgot, mm-hmm. Jason, last time I told you that my favorite zombie movie was, I forgot what it was, but it's World War Z.
That's a great one. Love
it. I love it. I used to be obsessed with Brad Pitt.
Of course. Well, love when it. Did you become attracted to Rick Grimes?
Oh, wow. Actually, probably this episode here. You know that I thought that I was doing the episode when he bit the guy's juggler. That's what you.
Oh no!
I got all confused. But this episode here, I'm glad I did this one because this is when I really started having so much respect for him, uh-huh. just the way that okay. he handled himself, and you know, that's yeah. Before I go off.
Okay, well, we're going to say goodbye and you can come back. No, I'm just kidding. that was intense. Well, I'm sure you'll call in for that one and we'll get to hear what you think. But so this one, really, that's pretty cool then that you're on for this one.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, it's Walking Dead season 4, episode 11, Claimed. Renee, as our guest of honor, would you like to read the plot summary?
As Rick, Carl and Michonne rest, their home is discovered by a group of men called Claimers, and they are forced to abandon it. Later finding signs towards Terminus along railroad tracks, Glenn and Tara learn that Abraham and Rosita are escorting Eugene to Washington, D.C., as he knows how to stop the Walker outbreak once there. Yeah, right.
That's not true.
Yeah, right.
So, how was it to watch this again, Renee, in general? Just, did you like it?
Okay. You guys hear me talk about my 9-year-old goddaughter. She's here because they're on spring break. So she was watching it with me. And watch it through her eyes, someone that has never seen it. Mm. She was like, when she saw Rosita, she was like, come on, what she got on? Like, she was a hot mess. Yes. She was like, why would she have that on? And then when the guys were talking about what they're going to do with Michonne, she was saying, Diamond, what are they saying they're going to do to her? What are they going to do? And before I knew it, I was like, they're going to rape her. And she was like, rape? And I was like, yeah, rape.
Yeah, they're going to rape her. Just rape. Like the leaves.
Yeah. I'm like, I said it too quick. But she, yeah, looking at it through her is like, it's so amazing. And she was asking me all kind of questions. And I'm like, she was like, this guy right here, Rick. And I was like, yeah, that's my boo. She was like, I'm going to tell Goddaddy. Seeing it again and seeing Rick and him become, you know, this is when Rick became gangster to me, because he was not playing with them at all. So this episode here is when I really noticed that Rick Grimes was not playing. He stood on business.
That's cool. When I asked you when you started to like him, I thought you were going to say the pilot. So it's really interesting that it's actually
definitely not. He was too. No, he was no. See what you got going on. Mm-mm, I need a man with a beard. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was pretty clean cut back then.
Yeah, clean cut. He was too pretty.
Yeah. I agree.
Lucy, how about you?
I'm just agreeing about Andrew Lincoln's levels of attractiveness. They knew what they were doing with the costuming in this episode. I was like, little ripped sleeve, little bit of blood on his arm. I enjoyed rewatching it. It was nice to get to know Abraham a little bit. Yep. And I really thought there was quite a lot of chemistry with Rick and Michonne, which I appreciated as much the first time round. So I liked that. And I thought the moments with Michonne and Carl were really cute.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I think I liked it more this time, maybe. One thing I really appreciated is that there were three different stories going on, and they were all very different, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Carl and Michonne was more reflective and a bonding thing. And the Eugene and Abraham, that was like exploring new characters and kind of getting it's like, what are you guys all about kind of vibe. And then the Rick part was just like home invasion thriller, you know, that was my favorite part. So I liked a lot.
Also Glenn, my respect level for him went to a whole nother level as well.
Because I think we'll get to it in more detail, but I just, one moment when Abraham was saying your wife's probably dead, and Glenn just stops, and it looks like he's thinking about whether to agree and stay back with them or not, but more he's just, his anger is building up, you realize, because then he fucking pops him in the face.
It's so good.
I knew he was going to cold clock him. I knew he was going to knock the shit out of Abraham.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Although, like, Buddy, seeing the two of them together, I was like, oh, they're both going to die in the same day. Yeah, I was like,
I was thinking that the whole time. I was thinking like I was still, my God, they're gonna die.
They're the ultimate die.
Bonding experience.
Rosita, all of I mean, oh my gosh. Yeah.
They all die except for Eugene.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Imagine that.
Yeah. That's crazy, right? That's what I was thinking about while they were walking down the railroad tracks.
Holy crap.
It's really sad. Yeah.
Eugene. Yeah, wow.
My mind is blown by that. I'm like, oh, yeah, exactly. They do all go.
Exactly. The scariest one in a bunch.
Yeah.
Like,
that haircut.
Let's get into our points. What do you got, Renee?
Jason, why would you make me go first?
You don't have to go first.
I'm the honest guest. Okay, yeah, I definitely have Abraham. I have Abraham is a mess. Abraham, and like I said the other week with what's the Tar? I mean, they brought a comic to, you know, to the show. We didn't know that we needed that. They were initially, I think I was like, why? Like, this is The Walking Dead. Why are they having all this comedy? But that's what we needed, because it was so much gore and it was so graphic. Sometimes we needed to pull back
And bleak too, bleak and tragic all the time.
Yeah. And Abraham, yeah, I didn't realize, I forgot about all the little funny things that he used to say and how he talked.
Yeah, you know, especially the scene where Tara is kind of judgmental of him because he was smiling when he killed all the zombies. And he's like, I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I just love that because it's like, dude, it's kind of true. I don't know if he meant this, but if 99% of the people in the world died and you're one of the ones still alive, it's kind of refreshing to see someone have a like happy attitude about that. Like, I'm lucky, yeah, man. But I think he might have also meant, because I'm with the scientist who has the cure, which...
Okay.
That's going to be a rude awakening.
I got that written down. Why did he say that? I had that written down.
What do you think?
I don't have no idea. Looks hard. Like, why are you smiling?
Yeah, I think he's just like, right now at least, he's in a good place as far as like, I'm still alive. I'm on a mission. It's all good.
The wife and your kid. I think that's for me with The Walking Dead. And I realize they can't show it, but they don't show enough grief because there's no way I'm going to bounce back that quick.
Like, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he's in denial too, because you know he also like the whole thing of telling Glenn,
yeah,
your wife's probably dead. Well, that's because his own wife died, and so he's got that perspective on it. And also, 99% of the people in the world, as I said before. So, but still,
including your family.
Yeah, but you should never say that to somebody though.
Yeah, I found it quite fun watching Abraham this time because like, he's got funny energy, Abraham, in this episode, and I think we as viewers at this point, we still don't like know him, and there's still a question mark about like, is this guy just a dickhead or is he good-hearted or like what is he about? Like, he is with the zombies, he's not cruel, but he's quite gung-ho in a way we've not seen. Like, he's smiling, he's like happy to do it. And I remember we were quite judgmental of like, the first time we meet Daryl, does he not call like a female zombie a skank or something? He's like, you are an ugly skank or something. Mm. We're like, oh, okay. Whereas Abraham, I don't know. Yeah, his energy is quite interesting in this episode and the way he is with Glenn. I remember, I think, when he finds out that Eugene's been lying, that's almost when we see him grieve and get angry, is because like, he's really attached himself to... And we see that in a flashback, don't we? Like, Eugene literally walks across him just after like his wife and kids have died.
That's right.
So he's just transferred everything into that.
I'm rethinking all this now. You're right. He didn't give himself any time to grieve. He just put all his hopes on this Eugene character.
Which is like bleak, man. Like that haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eugene he seems like the type of person that would tell a tale for someone to protect him.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it seems like Abraham probably just needed something to believe in at that moment, and so he let himself ignore all the red flags. But it seems like Rosita doesn't really necessarily believe, because she takes the first opportunity to go and help these people rather than continue on her mission. And then I think when Eugene accepts that, like, okay, we'll go with them for a little while and then we'll see if we find a car or whatever, then Abraham's like, well, I gotta follow Eugene everywhere he goes, you know, and get him back on track, because that's what he's pinned all his hopes on.
Yeah,
maybe because I know what, you know, what happened was going to happen, then I'm looking at it differently, because it's like, it's no way, Eugene, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we think Eugene shot the van on purpose?
Yeah, because he had a smirk on his face when they walked.
Right. That's what because Peter was like, I don't know. And I'm like, he looks pretty happy at the end. And there's definitely a moment where he pivots left where I'm like,
I don't know. I think he's just the worst, because there's so many other instances where he's shit with walkers after this, you know?
Yeah, but I think I'm with Renee on this one. I think he's at it. I think he's trying to get them to slow down, because as soon as they get to Washington, he's fucked.
Yeah. And then, so when he tells Glenn, you know, you gotta come with us, he says, let me tell you how to best avoid winding up just another dead alive prick. You find some strong like-minded comrades and you stay stuck together like wet on water. We need people. The more the better. We need each other, partner. I think that's right on. That's what I keep saying about The Walking Dead. Like, if you got to have that mindset, you know, bring people in and you're stronger together, but they have to be willing. It doesn't work if you're forcing them or kidnapping them. And I think it's kind of interesting that Glenn's wearing the orange backpack, right? Yeah. When we first saw the guy wearing that backpack, he was begging to be a part of the group and they just drove right past. Now Glenn's wearing it and he just wants to get away from the group. So I don't know if that was on purpose, but it's kind of an interesting backwards. All right, Lucy?
I had Abraham as well, actually. I'm just looking at some other notes I had. I'd forgotten how much I love Abraham talking, just like the things he says. I got talking about Glenn ending up just another dead alive prick. We have to stick together like wet on water. The only time he kind of stumbles a little bit is when he is talking to Glenn. He says, when people we love, when they disappear, that doesn't mean you got to go out that way too. And you can tell that that's something that has, I don't know, really cut him deeply, obviously. Son of a Dick really made me laugh when he was looking at the fuel. I was like, yes, this is the Abraham we're here for. And his whole like elaborate war story about a camel getting blown up. And then he's like, how in the holy hell could you possibly kill this truck? And then Eugene says, fully ramped up state and an ignorance of firing weapons. And then at the end, when everything's kind of falling apart a bit for Abraham, like Rosita's like, I'm going to go with these guys. What else are we going to do? Go to Washington, fix the whole damn world. And then Eugene saying, trust me, I'm smarter than you, and sort of smirking. I don't know. The banter was just great. He refers to Glenn as a persistent son of a bitch. I get why you're following him. And he's very much like, he's posturing for a lot of the episode with Tara. He's like, you know, what we have to do is just, it's just more important. Because he's feeling, I imagine you would feel quite smug if you thought they had the whole solution
there.
Absolutely. No judgment to him. Like, he's, you know, he's got cracking arms and he thinks he's got the cure to all humanity. Like, no, I'd be like that too, probably. And it's interesting that Tara's so kind of protective of Glenn. I like that she's like writing down on her hand all the places they've been. She's really wary of these new people and she's really holding her own with Abraham and she's not intimidated by him. And I think that's a nice dynamic.
But she also made the decision to let them put his unconscious body on a truck and drive away when she knew he probably wouldn't like that. But she was kind of in a tough spot because she didn't want to be sitting on the side of the road with an unconscious guy.
Yeah. Like, we've all been there.
Yeah, it happens.
What are you going to do? She did the best she could in a crappy situation.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. And she was writing it down on her hand. So that was cute.
Yeah, she was.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure when I first saw these guys, I wasn't so sure. Like, they're so comic booky and, you know, not only do they look kind of comic booky, especially Rosita, the way she's dressed right now, but all of them. And they have comic booky dialogue, son of a dick and things like that. But they also have really far out things to say, like, I'm going to insist that you hold the hell up, believe it or not, the fate of the entire damn human race might depend on it. And I think The Walking Dead was never meant to be a show about finding the cure or even understanding how this all started. No. Robert Kirkman wanted it to be like a grounded story, more or less, about how more or less everyday people would respond to the zombie apocalypse. So I already knew what happened because of the comics, but still I was like, this is changing the show. But now that we've been through the whole show and I've come to love these characters and I've come to know the actors a little bit at Walker Stalker, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad to see these guys, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward. And especially Rosita, like, she turned into such a great character. She was a
slow burn.
Yeah. And that scene in Alexandria when she's like, I think there's lightning and rain coming down and she's fighting off all the Zeds. That's one of my favorite scenes in all of The Walking Dead. And,
what is it she says when she comes back in? Don't go outside.
The comic, is she always dressed like that?
I think
the whole
before the time jump, yes. And then when they time jump a bit, when she and Eugene are a couple in the comics for a bit,
That's right. I forgot about that.
she softens a little bit and isn't dressed like that all the time. But for the first while, yeah, it's very much her comic book look. I just say there's so many places you can get bitten when you're wearing that little clothing.
I was thinking that Rosita probably told them, like, stop dressing me like this. Like, this is not cute.
Kristen
Yeah.
Serratos, yeah.
She probably said, no, I don't want to be objectified, even though I do objectify Rick Grimes. He don't have a like that. He don't dress like, she probably said, no one's going to take me serious, because I definitely didn't. I didn't, like I said, Rosita is one of my favorite female characters. But she was, I didn't take serious when she first came. Like, seriously, why are you dressed
Oh,
like
yeah.
that?
I mean, honestly, when I hear the word objectify, I think often that means that you appreciate someone just for their looks, but I think your love for Rick goes much deeper than that, so I would never say that you objectify Rick
It's a very
Grimes.
pure love.
But it's about his vibe and his
Correct. It's about his,
heroism and
yes.
but I get what you're saying, and yeah, I wondered about that because I think it goes away pretty quickly, right? Her the way her dressing like that. But Eugene too, like Eugene really, I think still the way he speaks, it kind of takes me out of the story because it's so weird. It's not the way anyone really talks. But what I love about him is he's flawed. And I like when a show has flawed characters. I don't want everyone to be a badass. I want some badasses, but if everyone is, then it's not as relatable, you know? You need someone who has some growth that they need to go through. And right from the start, he's a liar and he's lying because he's afraid. And that's relatable. And because I lie because I'm afraid. No, I'm just kidding, but I don't know.
Are you
But
lying?
then, or maybe I always tell the truth and I'm lying right now. But later he joins up with the Saviors. He's a traitor for a while, which is it's horrible, but I like that the show had the courage to have some of their supposed heroes do things that weren't perfect. And like I said, for a long time, he's not good at killing walkers. He gets fooled by a fake Stephanie. So I just love that they have a character that they can give all these sort of flawed experiences to. But then he ends up redeeming himself in a bunch of different ways, which I love. I remember just towards the end in seasons 10 and 11, I think, maybe even earlier, I started to feel really connected to Eugene, and I was surprised at that, and happy for it. So I'm glad to see him. So Josh McDermott has a role in, I guess there's a Suit spinoff called Suits LA. He's been in a few episodes of that, I heard, and he's also had an episode of The Righteous Gemstones,
Oh, no
and
way.
I just cannot imagine him playing anyone except for Eugene, right?
I mean, he
But no.
became that character, didn't he? I think the funny thing with Eugene is like he's in some points the most unrealistic character because of how he talks and how he looks. But then in other ways he's the most realistic character because he probably acts in a way that is much closer to how a lot of us would act in the pandemic. Like trying to stick with stronger people in any way you can, being scared, being bad at killing zombies. Like he's such an interesting mix that way.
And but then he does do that, he does become a hero at the end, so it makes us all feel like we have a chance, you know.
Yeah, he
I
does.
think.
He survives.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging, it's often your hormones too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, Renee, your turn. What do you got? What else?
Carl, that's where I stopped. That's where I was going to call. No, first with Michonne, I wrote literally, who ties their shirt up in the back?
Yeah.
To show your waistline. That would be.
Yeah,
yeah. I would be right there with Michonne. It's like, Michonne, really? 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 But when Carl, when they was talking about the soy milk, that just really broke my heart. Because before he put, you know, mentioned Judith, and it just, the bond between Carl and Michonne, it just amazing to me. And it was before that he even knew that she had a child. And when she told him about her family, he was like, you had a husband? What else? Why'd you tell me? You know, what else are you hiding? And I thought that was just, you know, really the fact that they were able to connect like that when he needed a mother figure and, you know, she needed another child. I thought that was really touching and moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he, like, they're already, it almost felt like a sequel to Clear as far as their story was concerned, you know, yeah. When they first started bonding, and now they're bonding even more. And he accidentally mentions Judith's formula, and that reminds him of her. And he was able to have some fun for a minute there, which Rick was happy about. But then after that, after he mentioned that formula, he retreated back into himself, and he only came back out again when she mentioned that she had a child who died, and he felt like, oh, I can connect with her on this loss, you know? And then that's when he had all the questions and everything.
I think there's like a moment when you're a kid as well, when an adult reveals something like that, and you're like, suddenly this person is a person. Like, I think he's always seen Michonne as like a person who he loves and cares about. But when you're at that age and someone reveals something like that to you, I don't know. I think as kids, you only know your own experience. Like, empathy is something that you develop and deepen. And this, I think, it's an eye opener for him, because someone he cares about has lived through that kind of loss. But also Michonne becomes a more rounded character rather than just a kind of side character in his story. And that's not a criticism of Carl, because we're all guilty of that, right?
Yeah. As a kid, like, you see your teacher and you just think teacher. And then they'll say something in class one day that you realize, oh yeah, they have a whole life and they're a person who has things going on and stuff, you know?
Yeah. And when it's something as shocking as that, you're like, oh my God, but you're so strong. It was funny what you were saying about the shirt, Renee. I was thinking, was it in a Ones Who Live promo thing? It was like Andrew Lincoln was talking about standing on the walls of Alexandria with Lenny James and watching Danai Gurira walk up in her costume, and they were both just like, she's the fucking coolest person. They're like, she is the cool. And like, I was watching her with her extremely comfortable and attractive shirt, and I was like, she could style anything. Like, you could give her a black bin bag and she would be like looking incredibly stylish, whereas Rick kind of hasn't got the memo about like maybe putting a new shirt on.
That white tee, I love to see a man in a white t-shirt and jeans. And when he put on t-shirt, I was like, yes sir.
Classic.
Do you remember the woman who used to go on Talking Dead a lot as kind of like a super fan, and she was in Community?
Yvette Nicole Brown.
Yeah.
So one time at Walker Stalker, Yvette Nicole Brown was going to moderate a panel with, I think, with her, with Danai Gurira. And so we were all backstage, and I was going to go introduce Yvette Nicole Brown. And Danai Gurira was like, you know, she's done a lot of things, right? And I'm like, yeah, I know Community and all this. And she's like, you better do her right. And I'm like, I will. Don't worry about it.
Amazing.
She's really like looking out for her, you know.
I love that.
But did y'all see the promo and the Ones Who Live also when they were in their trailers and she went to go get Andrew Lincoln and she came out And he was like, why do you have yours all, you know, in the middle like this? And she like, you don't want your outfit to look like this. He's like, yes, I do. And she's like, no, you're not. So her waistline, they always make sure that I feel like that she was kind of objectified a little bit, but only for her body because, you know, she, Michonne, they have her looking so just whatever. But for her body, they will always show her butt. You know, they will always show her waistline. They always show her from that angle. They did that a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're right. They didn't do that with Eugene as much.
I think it was because, I mean, Danai is very attractive, but on there, because she's always mugging and she's always looking a certain way, she does not have that softness about her that Sasha has. So I think it was to make people understand why Rick would be attracted to her.
Yeah.
So they pull her from a like from a different angle. I noticed that. I don't know if you guys noticed that. And actually, there's a lot, like I said, because I'm in a lot of the groups and I hear a lot of things that people say, and a lot of people say that, you know, she's not attractive. So in order to make her look attractive.
It was always shocking. Like in the previous episode, showing her in that dream / flashback all dressed up, you know, it was like, whoa, any of these characters, when you see they do rare flashbacks of pre-apocalypse or when they go to a place where they get to take a shower and dress up nice, it's like, wow, it's so different.
But Michonne looks rough though. Should they have her looking, she's always mugging. I think that's what it is because she tough. So she mugged more so that you don't see a lot of the other ones mugging like that. She's always mugging, which, and I do understand, you know, why she looks like that, but. Yeah.
What are you going to say, Lucy?
I was going to say, yeah, it's interesting. Maybe it was about making her I don't know, maybe they felt they had to do more work to make her a love interest, which is so wrong, but the chemistry is just, like I said, the two of them could literally be standing wearing trash bags and I'd be like, great, best looking people on TV, 10 out of 10.
I think it's perfect.
They get a lot of hate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not here.
No, not here. No.
Oh my gosh, never here. If anything, a weird level of enthusiasm. If anything, we're going to get
critical. Well, I mean, honestly, starting this up, well, I remember watching this episode the first time because I don't remember exactly when I started thinking, oh, actually, these two, there's something between them. I think this rewatch, I've thought that from almost the beginning, but first watch through, I definitely know this episode. I'm like, wow, they seem like a suburban family here. Carl and Michonne and Rick, and they're even talking about maybe we'll stay here forever. Is that the plan? I don't know. Let's hang out for a while and see. And so I really started thinking at this moment that, oh yeah, they could totally make a great couple. I think from here on, I was shipping them from this episode on.
Do you know, one of the moments that really cemented it for me was when Carl asked about Andre. And the first thing he asked Michonne was, does my dad know? Like, as though it was really obvious that Michonne would have told Rick. And I was just like, they're a little family unit already. Like, they just, there's a natural, like, thing happening here, and it's just really nice. Like,
As a woman, Michonne intentionally tied that shirt up, sashayed in that kitchen, and sashayed off so Rick can look at her. They were already feeling each other.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah,
she just probably didn't know. That's what I always say about Lori. I'm not a Lori hater because she wanted to get it on. It's just like, it's the ZA. I don't have time right now. That's why they could not, that's Rick and Michonne. It was obvious something was there, but until they got to a place where they knew that their kids was okay, that they could go somewhere by themselves and be by themselves and not worry about their children being hurt.
Yeah.
They were not going to do that. So that's what I don't understand. I don't care about people having sex or people getting together. But until I'm at a place where my child, I know if I take my eyes off of them for 1 second, I know they're okay. I don't know. I ain't in the ZA, but I know me. And I just wouldn't be thinking about that. I have to make sure my kids are okay. That's why Michonne always say the kids have to be okay. She always say that we have to make a place. They have to be okay. They have to be okay. In order for you to sit down and you to be comfortable, you have to know that your child okay. I say this all the time. My son is 34 years old. That is my only child. And I will go to war about him. I will go to war about my 34-year-old child.
Absolutely.
Period. I don't fight, but I will beat somebody's ass about my 34-year-old child. Period.
He's your baby, man. He's your kid.
Yeah, that's my baby. Gonna always be my baby. I don't care how old. He always be like, Mom, why you ain't calling me that? Because you my baby.
Lucy?
Yeah, I had Michonne and Carl as well. I just noted Michonne is so stylish. I think there's just, when it got to the kitchen, my notes are just all in capitals and I've written so much sexual tension. It's wild. And that moment where Rick's like, well, I'm awake today. I've just written, you are so stubborn, Ricky Dicky Doodah. So that's my take on that. but also, like, he must trust Michonne so much to let her take Carl on an errand like this, like just that comfort that he has there and that he's able to at least try and rest for a little bit and that she's able to assert herself and say, yeah, you're gonna rest. I'll talk a little about the scene in the house that they're clearing with Michonne and Carl. We learn about Andre Anthony. I love Michonne, this piece of information that we get about her in this flashback, that she's a bit of an art critic or an art connoisseur, and I love her looking at all this absolutely shit art in this house, like the really bad picture of the rabbits. I mean, it's not really shit, like it's fine, like if people have bought these pictures that's okay, but she's looking at it like she's in like an art gallery in Europe or something, just sort of staring at it. And the conversation that she and Carl have is so well written, where he says, how long has it been? And she says, it happened after everything happened. He says, does my dad know? Never told him. Never told anyone until just now. And this is my favorite bit. Your secret's safe with me. It's not really a secret. It's still safe with me. That's really cute. I love that.
I'm sure she appreciated that.
Oh, it was such a beautiful moment. And then I had forgotten in this, my memory of this time on the show is that in every episode, we were inching closer and closer to Terminus, and there was a lot of like ominous signs. And this is one of the first ones I remember. And I've just written in big capital letters, scary ass painting of the Terminus lady. Now, it's not the Terminus lady, it's the mom in the nursery, but it does look a bit like the woman who greets them at Terminus with the side braid and things like that. And the fact it's all scratched up and covered in what looks like blood. And just that turn where like the mood music's really creepy. She goes into this kid's bedroom. Everyone there is dead. It's the whole family with the mum on the rocking chair. Was it a self-portrait that she sabotaged after her family died? And the fact that Michonne protects Carl from that scene is really important. And she smiles when Carl says after that about Judith, my dad let me name her, maybe her and Andrea are together somewhere. So it's like the mix of these really like loving moments with the absolute bleak horror of what is happening. But that picture really creeped me out, and the whole way that the tone changes is just, it's really scary. Like,
well,
it's just really scary.
I want to talk about them too, but first I'm going to do another point that's sort of something about the whole episode.
Great.
It's called Before and After, because I think more than usual, this show does this a lot, but this episode focuses on kind of the juxtaposition of what came before of civilization and the way the world is in the ZA now, where it's wild and dangerous and tragic. And so in this episode, we see a lot of the trappings of the old world, the suburban house that Rick and Michonne are in, stories of Carl playing with his friends and
crazy cheese.
The crazy cheese, just the idea of milk and soy milk. Rick's reading a book, you know, Jack London short stories. Michonne's looking through kids' books and toys, all this stuff. And then contrasted with the horrific reality of the zombie apocalypse, this defaced painting that I found super creepy too. The whole family dead by, look like murder suicide, right?
You'd think. I think so.
Then of course the claimers, this gang of ruthless, aggressive, homicidal scavengers. So seeing the paintings, and then Carl brings the one that you were just talking about, and I was like, why is this one, only one of these paintings is vandalized and wrapped up? But I guess that's the theory, right? That it's the mom and she was ashamed or felt guilty and defaced her own painting, but we don't really know.
We never really get an answer. It kind of makes it creepier.
Yeah, I kind of like that we don't.
Yeah.
But that's, seeing that painting is what made Michonne, as soon as she saw that, she looked down the hallway suspiciously. And it also had an X over its eye, which I think reminded her of the governor and just gave her bad vibes. Yep. And I think honestly what happened is Carl defaced the painting and then gave it to Michonne to freak her out. No, I'm just kidding.
Carl painted the whole painting,
here,
let it dry,
how's this?
Covered it in blood, gouged the eye out, and then was like, oh, psych.
But Michonne... I'm just kidding. But I think that was sort of to break the spell of the old world. It was like, no, the world's fucked up now, right? And then she sees this family that's dead, and... I think the message of this episode is kind of like the old world is over, at least for now. You can still have relationships, have some joy, but you also have to be fighters and survivors and watch out for people all the time. And they do eventually find a semblance, at least, of the old world again when they get to Alexandria and maybe even more the Commonwealth, but they're in a transitional phase at best right now.
Yeah.
So Carl and Michonne. So when Rick says, I can't be his father and his best friend, he needs you. I know that's a lot to throw at you. So if you're ever feeling like you need a break, and she says, I'm done taking breaks. And I think that's a follow-on from last time we saw her when she was considering going back to being one of the Walking Dead, basically, and said, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I haven't taken a risk on caring about people since this whole thing started and I lost my son, but now I'm in it. You know, she's like ready to care again. And I would say, aside from this whole incident with Jocelyn and the kids later, that Michonne is in it for the whole rest of the series. Even at the end when she's telling Rick, you gotta love, you know, that's part of what started here.
It also makes that line from The Ones Who Live, I was in love with my son's best friend, slightly less bad, because it's sort of referencing this. Because I remember when he said that in the show, I was like, oh, phrase that better. And now I'm like, oh no, okay, he did kind of say you're his best. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. He's painting them as friends.
Yeah, only like 12 years later, whatever, it's fine.
So now, just Michonne is giving herself to this idea of, I can be a loving person with people again. I don't have to distrust everyone. I can risk it. I can risk caring. And so we see her open up to Carl in a way that she probably hasn't opened up to anyone since this zombie apocalypse started, you know, like telling she says, as you guys said, that this is the first time she's told anyone about her son. And, I thought it was super funny trying to use toddler tactics to get him to laugh, because I could totally see her doing that Cheese Whiz thing with her son. Do you have Cheese Whiz, by the way? This is supposed to, I think it's called Crazy Cheese because they couldn't use the Cheese Whiz trademark, but it's really Cheese Whiz. Do you have that in Scotland?
We do not have that in the UK. No, it's one of those things that, like, we learned about from American films and all our mums were like horrified, but I personally would probably try it. Like, I'm going to be real with you. Danai Gurira, like, stunning Oscar, you know, should have Oscars, has written plays, most intelligent women standing with, like, cheese dripping out of her mouth, looking really sad. I really felt very seen by that. I was like, oh, that's funny.
I never liked Cheese Whiz.
Yeah. I used to eat it on crackers as a kid, but I haven't had it probably since then.
Oh, it's horrible for you. But what I thought about is when Michonne and Daryl were, when she came back, when they were at the prison, and Daryl came down the hill on a motorcycle, because the governor came right after that. When they came down the motorcycle and Michonne said that she was getting ready to go look for the governor again, and Rick had the most disgusting look on his face ever. Like, girl, are you serious? So and right after that is when Michonne hurt herself. So I think that when Rick was asking her about, you know, if you ever want to take a time out, he probably thought she was still there that episode, because then is when instead of, he didn't know that she went off wandering and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I could see, like, if I had one of my kids and I was like, this kid needs a friend, but I have to be a father, and man, he seems to be having a good time with this woman here, but I don't want to foist my kid on her if she's not up for it, you know? But she's totally up for it now.
But why is it Michonne? Like, why did he become so close to her and no one else? He didn't develop a relationship with anyone else like that with Michonne. I was reading that they said that Carl and Daryl never really had a episode together between them two. I never noticed that. I'm gonna make sure I look for that.
Yeah, I don't remember. That's too bad.
Yeah, but him and Michonne from the very beginning, Is it just because you think they connected? Like how I just connected with you guys from the very beginning? It was just a connection
That's a
or
good
something.
Question. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they are great together. I honestly always hate to say this, but I don't think this was Chandler Riggs' strongest work in this episode.
It's a shame because it's coming off of a really good one the last time we saw him. But,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when it's not, I still think they have great chemistry together.
Yeah.
Just a little bit more on this. Now that she's brought him out of his funk because they can connect on having lost someone and gets him curious about her. And she says, I'm only going to answer one question per room. And I think that's because she has decided to open up more, but she's got to take it slow, right? Because this is super, not traumatic, but fragile. No.
It is traumatic to talk about someone.
Yeah, but
like
it's tender. It's a tender subject for her, right? It's the most tenderest.
Because it's still new, right?
Yeah.
It's not that long ago since she lost her child.
And it's the worst thing that's ever happened to her in her life. And probably. Clearly she trusts Carl a lot to be telling her this. And I can see why, because he's such a good person. And the fact that he said what you said, Lucy, like, you can trust me with this, even though you said you don't need me to, I'm going to keep it safe.
Yeah.
And that's what I got. It's amazing how Rick listens to Michonne. Like, for whatever reason, like when she was like, you're going to rest. And whenever she ever tells him to do something, he always says yes. Just like that. Michonne, Daryl can talk him into it. Well, no, because Daryl wanted him to kill Negan and he didn't. But Michonne, like I said, he just listens to her. And I think, again, that's one of the reasons why I love Rick Grimes, because it takes a strong man to be able to listen to a woman, to me. That's okay with not feeling emasculated, not feeling like I'm trying to take control, because men tend to be like that. My husband, he can be like that, but because he trusts me, he realized that I have his best interests at heart. And my husband, like I always say, he gangster like Rick Grimes. He has that type of personality. But with me, he really listens to me. Like, he will listen to me, and he won't feel like, girl, I'm the man and you don't tell me what to do. He does not. But it's because I feel like that Rick realizes that Michonne really cares, and that Michonne, that she's the type of person that will protect her family. Like I said, I'm going to go to war. I would go to war for mine. And I feel like he needed that. Rick needed someone where he could feel like, I can be vulnerable. I can let my guards down. And my child is going to be taken care of, along with Judith. But I'm going to be fine, where I can just relax. And like Lucy said, that he was able to let Carl go with her because he trusted her. He knew that she was not coming back without him, without Carl. And that was amazing to me. And that's one of the reasons why I really like Rick Grimes. Yeah. I like
And he knows, he's seen enough to know that she has great character, you know.
But he has seen that with a lot of them. But for whatever reason, Michonne is the one that he's comfortable with. I don't see him just letting Carl just go with anyone, because he is very protective of his son. Yeah. Very protective. He should be.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, she's got great character and she's super capable. So, but I think, and there's just something between them. So you put all that together.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Renee, do you have any more points?
When Rick was under the bed and he was shaking and trembling, you know how terrified he was. And he realized, I think at that moment, he had just dealt with the governor. But at that moment, it's some horrible, horrible people in the world. And in order for me and my family to survive, I'm going to have to leave the old Rick. He gonna have to stay behind. I have become gangster Rick. Yeah. I think it was at that moment I got to do what I got to do, because these people are crazy out here in the DA. And like I always say, this is the way it would be. Women would, again, I'm gonna go back to Lori. I understand about her needing to be protected, because we would have to be, because they were just talking about Michonne like she was just a, you know, she's not here. Smells good. I'm gonna be the first one. She ain't here yet. When she get back, I'm gonna get her. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do that. Like, what happened? Like, how did y'all just become like this? The ZA is what, Lucy? How long has it been?
Less than 2 years.
And y'all, all of a sudden, everybody's a rapist.
Awful.
Yeah. I mean, you hear now, like, about in war, it happens now in war, you know? Wow. And it's insane.
So all of a sudden, everybody just become a rapist?
just brings out people's
not everyone
worst impulses, you know.
Yeah.
So what happens is people like that, they tend to gather together. Is that what you're saying? They tend to coexist together because they're going to be okay with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think like attracts like. So it's just like that group with that they met in season two, Tony and that fat
fucking
guy.
Tony.
Yeah. Well, we never knew whether the young man, what was his name? Y'all had a debate about Randall. Was telling the truth.
Randall.
Yeah.
Never. So, but everyone in there was talking about what they was going to do to her.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No one. I heard no one said like seriously.
Right. Yeah.
The world. I would have to find. Like you said, I'm gonna be Eugene. I'm gonna have to find someone to protect me because the world would be awful.
Yep.
Well, it's you know, anyone can be a victim of assault, but I think for women there is another level of protection and fear there in terms of, you know, the violence that can happen when the rules are gone. Mm-hmm. And it's scary, and you don't want it to be that way, but it is.
Yeah.
And that's rough. Like, it's a rough go.
It's totally fucked.
You know, talking like that, like, whoa, Michonne, I'm so glad you got away because, ugh.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Michonne could probably just chop all their heads off, though.
Oh, yeah.
Still a woman. He's still a woman.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying. Okay, Lucy?
I wanted to talk a little about Jeff Kober, who plays Joe the Claimer. And I was looking at his Wikipedia entry. He's been in everything. Mm-hmm. He was, in fact, in like his list of credits go all the way back to the 80s. He's been in stuff like The Twilight Zone, MacGyver. He was in one of my favorite episodes of The X-Files, Ice, which is basically The Thing, but it's Mulder and Scully investigating an Alaskan research center. Mm. What made me laugh is just like a year or two before this storyline in The Walking Dead, he has a recurring role in New Girl as the landlord, who's desperately trying to desperately trying to have a threesome with Zooey Deschanel and Jake Johnson, and there's this one scene where he's in like a silk kimono playing the panpipes to On My Way by Rusted Root, and I just couldn't stop thinking about that throughout this episode. I was like, he's so good at playing this really creepy guy, but I've got Semi on My Way stuck in my head. This is our kind of introduction to him, and we don't really see him. I think once you've kind of seen his face briefly, you realize this is probably going to be a big bad, because that's not the kind of actor you cast to just be seen out of the corner of your eye. The whole setup of the Claimers with this, and of with Joe as this kind of guy who just sort of sinisterly bouncing a ball around the house. I've written, Renee, the Claimers are here. They sound lovely. They don't sound lovely. They sound terrible. I loved the way Andrew Lincoln played that fear. Like, no words, just sweat and shaking under the bed.
He did the famous head tilt.
He did the head tilt. And there are so... I was thinking, actually, this must have been a bit of a bitch to direct, because there are so many near misses and so many like shots from room to room. I was like, I'd be really interested to see how they did it, but like, there was so much they did to establish the Claimers that was really cool. Like when Rick's under the bed, he sees that the Claimer has blood on his shoes, and that's like an immediate kind of red flag that these people are violent. I would argue in the zombie apocalypse, like when you're killing Zeds all the time, it's maybe less of a red flag, but it adds up. Everything we hear about these guys is that they suck. Like, they're beating each other up. They're trying to kill each other over beds. I did laugh a little bit at the moment when Rick's, like, under the bed and it looks like he's sort of awkwardly waving at the guy who's getting asphyxiated. Like, hello.
You just said everything about them says that they suck, and that just made me think, what if they just stuck one thing in there, like one guy's like, oh hey, I found a plushie, would you like it, or something like that.
You know, the guy that Rick like waves hello to from under the bed, he doesn't die, does he? He just gets knocked out, because it's him that recognizes him later.
He didn't die.
Yeah,
you can see him moving,
you see him breathing.
Yeah,
he's
because I kept hoping he wouldn't wake up and tell on Rick.
I had it in my head that Rick killed a guy who was on the toilet, but maybe that was Jurassic Park. But anyway, I was excited to see the toilet death scene and Rick getting his iconic jacket, slipping out the window, and that very tense moment where he sees Michonne and Carl on their way. Joe just doing like peak evil stuff, like eating cherries and spitting out the pits and doing like a weird little claymore whistle. And you can see Rick is about to go up and really go in full guns blazing. But then I assume the guy in the toilet reanimates. But generally, I thought Rick just does so well in this with a very silent episode for him. Yeah. He doesn't do a lot of talking. It's really just these guys fighting. Who wrote and directed this one, Jason? I should have looked that up, shouldn't I? Hang on. Let me have a look.
It was a name I didn't recognize as far as the director.
Yeah, they did a great job. Yeah. It's a really strong, the tension and the mood. It's just, it's really good. Really
I swear he was, that sweat, it was just dripping from his hair. It was oily.
All right.
Just so sweaty.
So I got a point on this. Rick and the Claymores, which I forgot that all this stuff with the Claymores happened in the same house as last episode where Carl was yelling Jiggy Jar Jar do at Rick, you know. But I thought the encounter was really thrilling. I remember thinking that when I first watched it too. And it would have been okay with me if we never even saw these guys again because this was good.
Oh yeah.
But then the future plot is even better with them, with the stuff with Daryl and oh God. But I loved how they did this. He's weakened. Rick is weakened. He has no gun because he gave his gun to Carl and he's home alone. And that just when I wrote that, I'm like, yeah, he should have like heated up the doorknob and rigged a paint can to swing down and smack those guys in the face.
He missed so many tricks. Get out of here, you filthy animal.
And then just how he just heard voices and you could kind of hear a little bit of what they're saying sometimes, but mostly not. But you could get enough that there's a super sketchy, aggressive vibe arguing. I think he hears one kill the other one. But I love how it's hard to hear what they're saying because and you can't see any of their faces until Rick sees them because we're getting it all from Rick's point of view. We're like experiencing what a home invasion is like. And it made me feel like I was laying in my bed at night and all of a sudden I hear someone coming through my front door or something, you know, that's why it was so thrilling because we're usually watching zombie stuff, which I love zombies, but it's not relatable. That's why I think this episode, to me, the Rick part was like, holy shit, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
And then he scrambles on the bed and sees the legs of the guy with the gun. And you're wondering if the guy will discover him there, you know, and then he's like pausing. It's like, oh, what, does he suspect something? And then when he just lays on the bed and it like crushes Rick, you know, real close to him. That was just such a great moment. And then when the guy, other guy comes in and wants to claim it. And at first I was like, it's kind of weird that you would kill because they killed somebody at the front of the house. So he heard one guy kill, and then you just go take a nap.
These guys are the fucking worst, man.
I think it's probably Joe that says this will be our abode for the evening. Clean up your mess. So
this will be our abode. I mean, Joe's a classy man. Yeah. What can I say? He knows how to set the scene.
That guy, by the way. Jeff Kober, I did panels with him and he used to, I think he still has a meditation center or something. He's a really interesting guy.
Are you kidding? Yeah. That's amazing.
And he was in his panels. It was hard to get a read on him. He was a little rookery. Like I didn't know for sure if he liked me or not. And then there were some panels that were super deep and great, you know, and other times he seemed a little gruff, but he was a really interesting guy.
Interesting.
But so yeah, Rick kills this guy. And I mean, his name's Lou, according to the wiki, chokes him to death. He's definitely seen and heard enough to know that these aren't good guys. And if he doesn't take care of this guy, they may kill him and they may try to kill Michonne and Carl when they come back. So I have no problem with him killing this guy. And that got me thinking, how many people had he killed so far, Rick? We know he killed Dave and Tony at the bar in season two. Those were the first two. He killed Shane. Mm-hmm. He killed Tomas with machete to the face, you know. It's harder to know in Woodbury when they came in to save Glenn and Maggie because it was so chaotic. But the governor mentioned that five of his guys had been killed. So Rick probably killed at least a couple of those. And then this guy. So it's somewhere around 5 to 9. But by the end of Rick's story, it's 2,200 because he bombed all those people and the ones who live. So he got all more comfortable with it.
Yeah. Did everything correct to me.
No judgment.
Like, no judgment here.
No, I'm not saying that.
Everything is done correctly.
I can't think of one person. Maybe, yeah, I might have some debate about that last one there. But aside from that, I can't think of anyone where I thought he shouldn't have. Well, no, I take it back. We won't get into it. Yeah. Let's save that for when it comes.
No, we did right. So, well, you mentioned Merle. Penny, she inboxed me, and she was like, Renee, I was listening to the podcast, and you was like, Mercer, I thought you said Merle. I was like, she really does like bad guys. I was like, never, Penny, never.
Never.
I said Mercer, not Merle.
No, we are not Merle fans. Not at all. Mercer, though.
Yeah, he's good. All right, should we go into notes, or are we ready for that?
Sounds good. Yeah.
Do you have any?
I don't have much
random notes,
yeah.
Renee.
Oh, I did put. I'm so happy Rick took the gun because they tend to leave stuff behind that they need. I was so happy to see him pick up that machine gun. It's not.
Oh yeah.
You know what they do? Leave it behind, like it doesn't even. They don't even need it.
Yeah.
He did some smart thinking, grabbing the water and the book and things like that. I was like, that's, you know, for someone who like nearly died yesterday, that's pretty good.
Oh, when I love to see those boots. When the boots came out first, the window first before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was really smart. Mm-hmm.
And the jacket.
The jacket, I didn't even realize that he didn't have, I thought he had the jacket before. I didn't realize that was the murder jacket. I thought he already.
Yeah, it's the murder jacket.
So where did he get it from? The claimers? He got it from the claimers?
Yeah, ironically, I think Rick steals quite a lot of stuff from the claimers because I'm pretty sure that's where he gets his red machete.
Mm.
I'm a bit like, Rick, maybe you are the bad guy. Like...
No way. Lucy?
Honestly, we've done most of my stuff. I think Rosita's first line might be asking Glenn, is this yours, with a picture of Maggie? Which is quite nice because Rosita and Maggie end up having their own relationship and being quite close. And yeah, we see the Grimes clan see the sign for Terminus. And that sets them on the path.
Yeah.
And I can't stop thinking about that Robot Chicken sketch with the Welcome to Terminus musical and Michonne's character going, do you think they have merch? So if anyone's not checked that out, please do. It's really funny. It's quite an earworm.
I put it in the show notes last time when you mentioned it.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, that was cool because I think when you don't know what's going to happen, you're watching this for the first time and everybody's scattered, there's a part of you that, or at least for a lot of viewers, that can't totally appreciate it because you're just worried about when they're going to all get back together. And so then when you see these Terminus signs, and we saw already Tyrese Carroll and the kids see one, right, and start heading towards it. So now when you see Rick and Michonne start heading towards it, at least partly, I think people are like, oh, good. They're all headed to the same place.
No, I didn't think
they're going to reunite.
I didn't think good. I knew. Well, you know, it's The Walking Dead. By now, I begin to realize that wherever they go, it's awful.
But it's both. To me, it's both. It's like, there's going to be some bad shit there, but at least they'll handle it.
Yeah,
together.
But they're going to be. Yeah.
Okay. Just a couple. Seeing Carl so upset about Judith makes me feel really glad that he's going to get to see her again. You know, I thought about that because we didn't know. Well, I guess we did know she was alive at this point.
Yeah, we did. We found out last week. Yeah.
And then Rick's reading from this book of short stories by Jack London, which I haven't read any Jack London since I was a kid. So I went to ChatGPT to remind me, and it said his stories often revolved around survival, the struggle against nature, and primal instincts that can emerge in extreme situations. It's about how individuals adapt when stripped of civilization, relying on instinct, strength, and willpower. His stories frequently depict characters facing brutal conditions, testing their limits, and either evolving or perishing. So that seems very appropriate.
What is the name of that? Because I think we're going to all need that in a minute. We're going to all.
It was just selected short stories from Jack London.
Okay, thank you.
We have seen Jack London be taught in the Walking Dead universe.
By Carol?
By Travis in Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
I just remembered it there. I was like, it was The Call of the Wild, because that's the only Jack London book I know, and I'm 90% sure, I'm not going to go back and check, because I'm not going to rewatch Fear the Walking Dead, but I'm 90% sure in the pilot of Fear, that's what he's teaching in his English classroom.
I have zero memory of that. That's cool.
I'm sure Nathan will know. So Nathan, let me know if I'm right or wrong.
I'm telling you, they have little things they want us to pick up. They have these little Easter eggs they want us to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a nod to us.
IMDb?
IMDb dive. There was one that really made me laugh in this. Because if it's not true, then someone's made it up, which is funny. If it is true, it's just funny. And it is. Andrew Lincoln performs most of his own stunts, including the drop from the roof. However, he did say the most dangerous part was being distracted by co-star Norman Reedus, who was mooning him from below. I hope that was true.
That sounds very true.
As Rick is hiding from the claimers, one of the bedrooms he hides in has a poster on the wall of the Norman Reedus movie, The Boondock Saints.
Mm.
Which I've never seen. Is it worth seeing?
I didn't like it, but most people love it.
It's a cult classic, right?
Like, yeah.
What was it? How did you say it again? What was it?
The Boondock Saints.
Oh.
I can't say it. Boondock Saints. It's to me, it felt like a Pulp Fiction knockoff a little bit.
Oh, wow.
But everyone's going to hate me for saying that, so just, it's subjective. If you love that movie, more
just
power
get
to
it
you.
Out. Just get it out.
The special effects team uses many methods to simulate bullet hits. The crew members are firing dust pellets from paintball guns. Paintball bullets hurt quite a lot, I have to
say.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah. In the Talking Dead poll after this episode, the question was, what's the most terrifying thing in the zombie apocalypse? Eugene's mullet won by 47%. Poor Eugene's mullet. actress Christian Serratos says she is the polar opposite of her character Rosita. In fact, she is so afraid of knives, she buys food that doesn't need to be cut. I don't know if that's true or not.
One of my favorite Christian Serrato stories is we had a onesie party at one of the Walker Stalkers. It was just the cast and a bunch of us. And she was there and I was wearing a Tigger onesie and she loves Disney. So she was all like happy. And then I couldn't do a Tigger impression. I think she was bummed by that.
Oh, Jason, have you been working on it ever since?
I blew it.
I blew my chance. The final IMDb fact is this is the first appearance of the brown jacket Rick will go on to wear throughout the next few.
I have one more. When Michonne's in the bedroom with the dead family and one of the bodies is holding a Super Dinosaur comic book, which is another comic written by Robert Kirkman.
No way.
They stick his comics in a lot.
You guys intentionally look for details like that? Do you like into because you all are podcasting on it? Because I definitely didn't look for it.
I intentionally went to the Walking Dead wiki and read about it.
Amazing. My IMDb fact is that one of the walkers in the first scene with Tara and Abraham looks like my ex-boyfriend. And I was very glad I matched him. Timeline-wise, this is a funny one because things seem to happen on different days within this episode. So all of Abraham's stuff seems to happen on day 525, which is Carl's pudding day. Mm. But the stuff with Rick and Michonne and Carl seems to happen on day 527, so 2 days later than that, which takes us up to like the 2nd of February. I'm skeptical about some of this timeline, but I guess it kind of makes sense. So
you always say that. I'm skeptical about this timeline.
I know. I'm like, I don't think this is right.
But, it's, you know. I think the most important thing, the interesting thing about the timeline stuff is to get a general idea of how far into the zombie apocalypse we are. And also to realize how close together all these things are that are happening right now. It's like each episode was a week apart, but it's all happening within a few days after the governor came, right?
Beth is going to be dead in about a week.
Oh,
like if you look at it written down, but for us, it was like months and years.
Right.
Like,
And because we had to wait so long. Yeah. I'm telling you, I felt like I was about to lose my mind when I had to wait so long for The Walking Dead.
It was awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
That's why I really try to find other shows I like so I can, the shows that aren't on, I don't
but this have is to my worry about them. Show.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Exactly. It's my
I love
watch.
The Walking Dead. Like, I love Game of Thrones, but they did my girl wrong, Khaleesi, so I really don't watch it. But like, I wouldn't podcast on, I ain't gonna say waste my time. I would not take the time to sit down, watch it, take notes, call in. I wouldn't do that with any other show but The Walking Dead. That was the only show.
My wee dad's just recovering from his knee operation. He's finally watching Game of Thrones. I don't have the heart to tell him that he's like a million years like behind the times. I was like, how's it going? He's like, Ned Stark's just died. I was like,
Yes.
oh,
Oh, yes.
it's like, so you're right at the start, and he's like, aye, but he's like, I'm rooting for wee Khaleesi. I'm like, all right, well, good luck with
Okay. He
that.
knows it was on a long time ago, though, right?
I hope so. Like, I'm
Yeah.
not, yeah, I hope so. He's very into it, but it's just that way, you know, you're
Cool.
like, you
It's a good
know that
show.
happened a while ago. Yeah.
So, only on The Walking Dead would you try to kidnap someone because you thought we're stronger together?
Oh, crap, I didn't think of one. Only on The Walking Dead would crazy cheese make you more sad rather than happy.
Only on The Walking Dead will you tie your shirt up. I'm never going to stop this one. Only on The Walking Dead. Only on The Walking Dead would you tie your shirt up and sashay off in the kitchen for your so your future husband can look at your booty.
Obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people he kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
So I thought it should be mentioned that there are two awesome Steven Yeun related things happening right
Yay.
now. One just ended, Invincible season 3. I've really enjoyed that show. It's super gory. I mean, it's a cartoon, but it's like gory as hell.
Oh, it's brutal, yeah.
Yeah, that's also based on another of Robert Kirkman's comics. If you guys didn't know that, you're just hearing about it, I check it out. It's on Amazon Prime. A bunch of other Walking Dead actors have either have role supporting roles on there, like Ross Marquand does, or they've guested. And JDM just turned up, so that's pretty cool. I haven't seen the
Yep.
final episode yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And even better, in my opinion, Bong Joon-ho's latest Mickey 17, which stars Robert Pattinson, Naomi Ackie, who I've never seen before but was so good, Mark Ruffalo, Toni Collette, and Steven Yeun. And Steven Yeun plays kind of an a-hole, and it was really fun to watch.
He's brilliant. I went to see it
Yeah.
last week and I loved
It's
it.
so good. I mean, I wish I had time to do a whole episode on it because it's the kind of movie that I love where it is actually based on a novel, but it's pretty, you know, it's not a lot of people have heard of this. It feels like a new, fresh, original thing, not cookie cutter at all. It's edgy and dark and funny and it's sci-fi and I just
And
love
Robert
it.
Pattinson is
So
fantastic in it.
good, yeah.
Sci-fi. What's the name of it?
Mickey 17.
Mickey 17.
And even just to see Steven Yeun in a role, you know, as a Walking Dead fan, it's great.
It's really good.
Next, Deadline reports that, quote, momentum for the second season of HBO's The Last of Us is clearly building. Per Warner Brothers Discovery, the trailer released Saturday as part of the show's South by Southwest panel amassed 158 million global views across platforms in just the first 3 days, which is a record for HBO and Max Originals. The
Holy
new
moly.
trailer outperformed previous trailers and teasers for The Last of Us by a margin of at least 160%. I haven't watched the trailer because I already know I'm going to watch it. I don't want to be spoiled. I'm so excited for The Last of Us season 2. I just want to let all you Last of Us fans know we're still planning a couple of Last of Us episodes pre-season to get ready. We will do an episode where we go over some news that's come out and talk about what we think that's coming up based on the second game. So some of that will be spoilery, but we'll have clear warnings about it. I personally think if you haven't played the game that you should stay away from spoilers. And then after that, we'll do a season one catch-up episode the week before season two debuts to help refresh everyone on it. That will only be spoilery on the stuff that happened in season one. So everyone who wants to get ready and be reminded going into it, that would be a good one to listen to. Are you into that at all, Renee? Last
The
of
Last
Us?
of Us? Yes, I made a post about it. I love The Last of
Oh,
Us.
good. So good.
Well, Jason, you have some excellent people on your team, podcasters, because Penny, that's my friend. She and I
She's
have been
great.
talking.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I was telling her that I wanted that I was fasting, and I went to call in for The Handmaid's Tale and The Wheel of Time. And so she told me she was going to reach out to some of the people that do that, and they were going to inbox me, and they did. I forgot for The Wheel of Time. I forgot the guy's name, but he inboxed me. He told
Greg,
me.
Yeah.
Greg.
Yeah. I really appreciate cool. that.
Yeah. Yeah. Aww. Some great shows we're covering coming out.
You really are.
People, they don't have to do that. I know they're busy, you know? I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. It's all about the community. With us.
You got to find your people and stick to them like wet on water. Yeah, that's right. Abraham told me.
All right, that's it for the news. Let's move on to listener moans, groans, and grunts.
Lisa Edmondson Walker. I just watched an episode of ER with Michael Cullis in it. Smiling face emoji. Laughing emoji.
He shows up in a lot of things.
How do you pronounce his last name? Cudlitz?
Cudlitz.
Cudlitz.
Cudlitz. Cudlitz. Yeah.
I loved him in Gross Point Blank. So funny.
He's another one who's been in everything, right?
Yeah.
He's been in
90210. Loads of stuff. Yeah.
My favorite improviser and yours, Jenny Ryan, says, Renee! I will have to listen to this for sure. Renee is amazing. Jenny is amazing too. So it's two amazing people. I love it.
Thank you, Jenny.
Sweet. Amelie Rochette said, I had a Diet Coke. My favorite movie is Stargate. Laugh emojis. Sorry, you just got me into bad lip readings.
Yeah, Amelie was a first timer.
She hadn't seen it yet. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Amelie.
When I tell you, oh my God. I mean, I stayed up all night one night. Oh my God.
It's so funny.
They're so good though.
I love those so much.
Now, this last name, how do you pronounce it?
I would say Prestigiacomo.
Amanda K. Presta. Finish it, Jason.
Prestigiacomo.
Presta, listen, this Geechee, okay? Prestigiacomo. I'm
That's
sorry.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Give me sweet pie. I'm so sorry, okay? Excited to hear more of Mrs. Renee Grimes. Woo, 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 woo. Love her voicemail for Walking Dead and the House of Dragon. Oh, Amanda, super sweet. Thank
That's
you.
So nice. Matt King says, Eugene plus machine gun equals chaos. This felt like a filler episode, though it was good to find out some of Michonne's backstory.
I guess. Alma Contreras says, woohoo, Renee.
Yay.
Ugh, the Claimers episode. I didn't like these guys, but I do recall getting a few laughs from some of the stuff they said. I hated how Daryl felt forced into hanging with them. Well, catch y'all in the cast. Very excited to hear Renee join our dynamic duo. Thanks, Alma.
Thanks, Alma.
I feel like Alma and Renee, you guys would vibe.
We do. We vibe all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I never read the other podcast. That's my
Amazing. That's cool. I'm really glad to hear that.
All right, here's a call from Steve Brown.
Hello, the cast of us. This is Steve, and this is for The Walking Dead, Season 4, Episode 11, Claimed. Crook Road. I don't know why that just made me giggle. Good old Abraham doesn't want to waste bullets, so he's just going to take them out himself. And now we come back to Carl and Michonne, and is she wearing Rick's shirt? Not Rick's shirt, just an extremely comfortable and attractive shirt. Ooh, joking about milk, and he mentioned Judith, and you see him stop. Man, Chandler Riggs is really a good actor. Really is good. I had to pause it for a second because remembering, Rick and Michonne from the last of us, and this conversation they're having in the kitchen here where he tells Michonne that he can't be Carl's father and his best friend, that he needs her to be a best friend. Wow, that's so, wow. The writers of The Last of Us really understood where these characters were and what's going on with them. Oh, I never noticed that before. Rick giving Carl his python, his cold python. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. They're on the porch with the three of them about to send out Carl and Michonne to go scavenge. Toddlers find me funny. This Michonne and Carl relationship, seeing it start here at the beginning, is really great. Oh, and she just revealed to him that she used to have a son, a three-year-old. Oh, and Rick wakes up to people in the house or men arguing in the house, and we go to a non-existent commercial and come back to Rick. Well, I remember this now. Yeah, he's going to hide. Oh, that is an ugly painting. Why was it all covered up? But this conversation between Michonne and Carl was great, but now she finds this painting, or he gives her this painting. I don't understand. Oh, Michonne found a kid's room. Is she going to find a kid zombie? I hope. Oh, on the bed. Oh, the guy on the bed just said claimed. Title of the episode, mic drop. But of course, now they're fighting over it. Okay, so Doc Martens just killed the guy, and now he's on the bed. Oh, I really like Abraham. That monologue about the world we live in was very military-like. I mean, he's on mission, so I love it. We get the first reveal that Eugene is a doctor who knows what all started this, and Rosita is still looking sexy. Ooh, Abraham telling Glenn that Maggie is gone. No, that's no bueno, sir. Oh, Eugene fumbling with the rifle, and he's shooting walkers, but he also shot the truck. Ooh, we cut back to Rick, and this is tense, man. This is him in the house and these bad guys. When they figured out that somebody was staying in the house, and one of them was a woman. When Rick just found a guy taking a dump. I guess the guy wasn't. He was just sitting in the bathroom. And Rick killed him anyway, so. Back to Abraham. And how did you kill the truck? Eugene convinces Abraham to go with Tara and Glenn and Rosita because I'm smarter than you. You guys are spoilerful, so we know what the truth is with Eugene, but it's just funny to see.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, and Rick sees Carl and Michonne coming back, and Jeff Kober is sitting on the porch. Well, I guess one of the dead guys just woke up in the house, so that spared him. Oh, and Rick takes the bandage off his hand as they see the sign for Terminus, and let's go. All right, on to next week.
Mm-hmm. I think when I read the comic, I thought there was a chance Eugene was telling the truth, but probably not. I don't know. Never.
Megan Dobley Lehman. So funny that you just hit this episode, because today I randomly saw a clip of the actor named Jeff Kober, who played Claimer Joe when he appeared in an episode of Law and Order SVU earlier in his career. I had to look him up to figure out why he looked so familiar. He looked really different on SVU, but equally unhinged and evil. Mm-hmm. Playing a character named Abraham, the leader of a cult who married an impregnated young girl. Ew, exactly. I'm glad to throw all over again. That's cool.
Nice, Megan. Jacob Decker says, one of my favorite aerial view shots when Glenn is lying there on his back about to fall and all the walkers, zombies, geeks are underneath him at the fall of the prison. Just beautiful directing. Also, why does anyone in their right mind tell someone, hey, you ain't ever going to see your missing wife again? Like, bro, yeah. For real. Be positive. Glad Glenn turned around slowly to swat Abraham's mouth. Thank you all for this rewatch. It's my favorite Monday podcast, along with Kill Tony. This is important.
I just want to know what's your favorite
workaholic guys.
What's your favorite Tuesday podcast?
Yeah,
exactly.
Every day of the week. We want to know.
We want to know. Thanks, Jacob. Becky Anderson says, hey, Lucy, Jason, and Renee. Very excited to hear the podcast when it comes out. Knowing you'd be on, Renee, I'm giving a shout out to the shirtless Rick scene.
Aren't we all?
This episode had some great character building. Michonne with Carl was great. Protecting him from seeing the horror of the dead family and how she opened up to him. His your secrets are safe with me is one of the best Carl moments. The scenes of Rick hiding and escaping from the bad guys in the house was intense. I love when a show can make a scene great when there's a little dialogue. Yeah, me too. Absolutely. I felt his fear. The real MVP of this episode, though, is a can of crazy cheese, or as we call it in the South, squeezy cheese. Much love to y'all.
Yay.
It's good. All right, cool. Here's Archmaester Rennie.
One thing I noticed in this episode is when Michonne sprays the crazy cheese on her inner mouth and lets it hang down her chin and kind of pretends to be a walker to cheer Carl up. And Carl doesn't think it's funny at all. That kind of echoes back to a few episodes ago when Michonne saw the walker in the herd she was traveling with that kind of looked like her, and that was like a reflection of what she could become. And now she's so far past that. She's so dedicated to being alive, being part of this group, this family, that she can actually make a joke about it. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I love that.
And I also wonder whether Lucy's IMDb dive is going to mention the interesting continuity error in this episode. When Rick goes into the bathroom, one of the claimers is sitting on the toilet, presumably doing what people do when they're sitting on toilets. But after he has succeeded in strangling the guy when he's got him down on the floor, you can clearly see that the toilet seat lid is down. It has a really ugly green shag cover on it, and it is definitely closed. So there isn't any reason why that guy would have been sitting on a closed toilet seat. That is all.
It makes me want to go back and look at that scene.
I know.
What are you doing in there?
It was because my goddaughter said, she's like, Grandma, did you see that toilet? She saw you. She sure definitely said something. And I was like, oh, it has a cover on it, girl. Maybe he was sitting there trying to get away from those crazy people.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, I've been in, like, per the bit, was for professional situations where I've gone to hide in the toilet. So yeah. Like...
Yes.
The worst thing is if he was some guy that they came upon and he pretended to be tough because he didn't want him to kill him. And he went into the bathroom to cry to himself and Rick came in there and killed him.
No, that did not happen.
He's been hiding there for like the last 2 weeks. Like, what?
And the noise, it was like, so no one heard them fighting. Like, you guys were fighting and no one heard that. Yeah. No one.
Yeah. But Rick got around his throat really quick, so he at least couldn't.
Yeah, but they were bumping into the door and throwing. Yeah, that noise. Okay.
That's true.
Trying to get to the
Billy Thomas, Billy Thompson. That's Billy Thompson. Hello, hello. Hope you guys are well. This episode has it all: tense scenes, character building, zombie slaying. What an absolutely classic Walking Dead episode. Yes, the claimers. They always remind me of the webisode about Rick's red machete, where it falls into the hand at some point throughout its life. Quick question. Did you guys ever cover the webisode?
We've talked about them a little, but I don't think we've ever done a whole episode. If we were going to do one, that would be the one, because that was my favorite.
Red machete. Yeah. That's a good one.
The scene of Rick under the bed was still so intense, even though we all know that he escapes it and still manages to capture that feeling of playing hide and seek when you was a kid and almost getting found. Do we know if Daryl is with them at this point or not? I can't seem to remember. I don't think so.
No, Daryl, not yet.
Mm-mm. Rick, Michonne, and Carl are really starting to become a little family now. Yes, they are. It's completely beyond me how I didn't realize on the first watch that Rick and Michonne would eventually become an item. It's just so damn obvious. Yes, it is. You got to just love Glenn's heart. Abe is such a badass. There is no chance I'd be taking a swing at him. I didn't read the comics until after watching the show and still haven't completely finished. But when did you guys realize something was up with Eugene?
Probably right from the start. Yeah.
I think it was this episode the first time around that I started getting suspicious with his happy smile, which walking in the opposite direction of DC. Anyways, thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, Billy.
He's in love.
We got Rachel Teal Edwards. Oh, Rachel. Always nice to hear from you. Rachel says, Renee, I can't wait to hear all you have to say about this episode. I mean, I'm sure you would have loved to be in the house with Rick, taking care of your man, nurturing him back to health, maybe giving him a sponge bath, because OMG, he's so sweaty and disgusting in this episode. I can't take it. But damn, the claimers are terrifying. I freaking love this episode, though. I didn't even remember that all the Abraham/Glenn stuff happened too. In my memory, Rick being trapped in the house and trying to evade the claimers was like 90% of this episode. How is it actually just a fraction of that? Those scenes are just so good,
yeah.
Exciting, and well executed. Seeing this house when we toured Sonoy a few years ago was one of the highlights of the whole Walker Stalker weekend for me. Of course, it's a joy seeing Michonne and Carl bond as she finally reveals that she had a son. I like that while he's scavenging what he can from the house, Michonne is casually ambling around and looking at all the artwork they had on the walls. It tracks with her recent flashback/dream that she's into art and likes to critique it. I'm sure some of what they had in this house was pedestrian too. I have one thing to say about the Glenn storyline. They passed the bus 3 hours ago. Do you know how far they've driven in 3 hours? Or how long it would take to walk back the same distance in an attempt to find Maggie? I made Grok do the math for me, and if they were going an average of 40 miles an hour, it would take 40 hours to walk the same distance. They are so far away from where they started. I know I'm being nitpicky, but that's an absurd distance to cover. Tara should have said they passed the bus an hour and a half ago or something. Much more believable. Never mind the Walking Dead people or the idea that Glenn would even stand a chance against Abraham in a fist fight. This is the thing I'm stuck on today. Okay, I don't have much to say this week because I'm already working on my thesis for next week. I am forever obsessed with Still and can wax poetic about Bethel like Renee can about Rick Grimes, so I need time to edit my thoughts. Cheers, fam. Can't wait to listen. Aww.
That's actually when as Lucy was reading this, I thought it was going to be longer than a 40-hour walk, so that's not so bad, I think. I mean, it would take a few days, but maybe I don't remember if they find a car or something. But you mentioned Still next week's episode. That's the one where Beth and Daryl play Never Have I Ever over a jar of moonshine. And in honor of that, for our Patreon group, we're going to play a game of that over Zoom that weekend. That's coming up for Patreon people. We're going to do a little day drinking so Lucy can join us for that one.
Yeah, man.
All right. Here is our final call from Carly.
Hi, Jason and Lucy. This is Carly in Santa Fe, and I wanted to talk about Claimed. Abraham and Eugene, I lived in Austin, Texas for about a decade, and I was working in state-level politics, so I traveled around and met people from all over the state. And I would not blink to meet someone like Abraham or Eugene, the way they talk, the way they dress, the way their hair is styled. I mean, Abraham having obviously dyed red hair would raise some eyebrows, but if he was a natural redhead, no blinking whatsoever. Like they never struck me as anything cartoonish or out of place. Like, yep, those are some dudes from Texas. I feel like I've met people like them multiple times. The other thing in this episode that really stood out to me was Rick being just so happy to have Michonne. You know, she's taking care of his son, letting him rest. He can trust her completely. It was just really nice to see him be able to relax, you know, like, I mean, it's just nice. And that is something I totally missed every other time I've watched this show is that just that comfort, that security in having someone you trust to take care of things, setting a foundation for a real relationship and an equal relationship. I love it. And then the last thing I wanted to say that stood out to me was Abraham trying to convince Tara that helping Glenn find his wife isn't important, like that there's a hierarchy of important things to do in this situation, and saving the whole damn world is a higher priority than helping some guy find his wife. And for Tara, that's not the case. Like, I think Tara really likes Abraham when she meets him. You know, he's smiling and I think she admires him and their whole crew. But there's that fundamental disagreement that Tara, either out of guilt or some other obligation, she's going to help Glenn find his wife, and that relationship is more important than even curing the world of the zombie virus. So I thought that was a cool thing to think about. Have a great week. Don't get bit.
Thank you, Carly.
Oh, thanks, Carly.
I thought it was also maybe a sign that she just wasn't sure she believed what Eugene was selling.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then we have one final message from Michael Koska, who says, Renee's the best.
That's my friend.
Yay! He's right.
Michael, I feel the same exact way about you.
He's a great guy.
I met some wonderful people, I'm telling you, since I joined this podcast. I really have.
Me too. Really have.
Good people.
All right, that is our show, episode 629. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. As always, Renee, thank you so much. And just thanks for participating in this whole time. And it's always so much fun to hear your messages. And they're just like full of life. And it's just really fun to hear you talk about the show.
Thank you guys for inviting me on. I love this. And I'm just so happy I got to see Lucy, my girl.
Yeah, hopefully not for the last time. Hopefully just the first.
Definitely not.
So next, we'll have The Walking Dead Season 4, Episode 12, Still.
And if you want to write in or leave us a voice message about it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, please check out our other podcasts, one of which is Yellowjackets WTF, which I'm finally going to get to go and join. I've been watching all season long and listening along, and I get to go be on it now, so I'm excited for the next week.
Yeah.
And this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Kay Ray, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you to Kay and everyone else who does that. Without it, I wouldn't be podcasting still, or at least not at the level I am. I would probably still be doing this one, honestly, but not all the other ones. But I always release these episodes ad-free for patrons, so that's one of the perks. And with the rewatch episodes, if I can get it edited in time, I usually release it a few days early. And as I mentioned earlier, in honor of Beth and Daryl playing Never Have I Ever, we're going to get together over Zoom that weekend to play a game of it ourselves, and anyone who supports through Patreon can join. Lucy's going to be there. Renee, you think you might join in on that?
I'm definitely sure. I'm going to have to drink Kool-Aid, though.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, you don't have to drink moonshine.
That sounds fun.
What about Peter?
He'll be there.
He's going to be there.
Woo-hoo. He'll be there. He'll be there.
He'll definitely be there.
Find out some things.
I'll find out some things. Sorry.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Amanda Kay, Prestigicomo.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.